Welcome back to Dakota Midday from South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. The Midwest is often dismissed as flyover country, its people unfairly characterized sometimes as dull and uninteresting. But the authors of two new books argue that the region has played a crucial role in the development of the entire country. In Small Town Dreams, Stories of Midwestern Boys Who Shaped America, historian John Miller tells the stories of Henry Ford, Ronald Reagan, Walt Disney, and other Midwesterners who transformed the nation and the world. And in his book, The Lost Region, Toward a Revival of Midwestern History, John Locke outlines how the Midwest shaped American institutions and attitudes. John Miller is Emeritus Professor of History at South Dakota State University in Brookings. His book, Small Town Dreams, comes out in a few weeks. John Locke is a historian, attorney, and senior advisor to Senator John Thune. And John Locke gives a book talk and signing this evening at Zanbro's in Sioux Falls at 6 o'clock. You'll hear more about his book, The Lost Region. John Miller and John Locke, welcome back to both of you to Dakota Midday.
Good to be here.
Thanks, Carl.
Well, John Locke, to begin here, I'll ask the same question I did when you were on the program a couple of months ago, just to help us understand what we're talking about when we say the Midwest. What part of the country are we referring to?
We're talking about the 12 states from Ohio out to Kansas, Nebraska, and the Dakotas. That's the traditional definition, and it's stuck the longest. It's used by the census, and I think it's generally accurate. Of course, as I say, it's fuzzy around the edges. Only about half of South Dakota should be definitely considered in the Midwest. But those are the states we're talking about.
And John Miller, in your book, Small Town Dreams, that's the same region that you're writing about?
Yes, exactly. Those 12 states, some geographers, historians, and other cultural commentators get into big arguments about where the Midwest is. It's an interesting subject, but I was more interested in the stuff of what I was talking about than the boundaries, which I think is John. And by the way, if listeners out there don't know it, John is one of my former students at SDSU, so we're a case of former professor and student who are now currently colleagues and collaborators in working on history.
Well, John Miller, just to clear up one more definition, your book is Small Town Dreams, writing about Midwesterners from small towns. The definition of small towns, that's something that's not exactly all that precise either?
Well, you are telling me. I've been talking and thinking and writing about small towns for I don't know how many years, at least 20, and I always remember something about 20, 25 years ago, there was a cover story in Newsweek magazine about small towns, and it had a road sign, you know, coming into the town of some town in Florida, I think, that had whatever it was, 80 or 90,000 people, I think. Well, if that's New York's definition of a small town, I don't know that definition. I had a basic, not entirely arbitrary cutoff at 25,000, so all my small town boys came from places that at least when they were young, you know, towns always change and grow, or subtowns do anyway, places of less than 25,000 people, and most of them were actually less than 10,000 people.
Now, these two books, similar in the ways that you're bringing to the forefront, the history, often neglected history of the Midwestern region in the country. John Locke, I'm wondering if the publication of these two books suggests that maybe this area is not as neglected as it was, or perhaps there's some renewed interest in the region?
Well, I think the latter. I think there is some growing interest, and I think it's represented by these two books. But I would say that over the last 30 or 40 years or so, there's been very little scholarly attention to the Midwest as a region. There have been a few books here and there, certainly, but there's really been no organized effort by a scholarly association or by a university press to focus on the history of the American Midwest, and that's why I call it the Lost Region. But we've had some luck. John Miller and I have both been proselytizing for more Midwestern history for several years, and there has been something of a response in the last couple of months. Some scholars interested in this have formed the Midwestern History Working Group, and it has about 150 members now. And we're going to have some conference panels coming up in Omaha next month and in Michigan in May. So I think there is some interest out there, but it's essential that books like John Miller's and also mine get out there and start to circulate and start the discussion, because it's been a pretty muted conversation for a long, long time. But I hope that will, I hope these books will start to change that.
John Miller, what has been your experience over, what, three or so decades of being a historian and teacher? What has been the response regarding this Midwestern history? Has it been neglected, and are people that interested in it?
Well, there's no doubt it's been neglected. First of all, I think we need to clear something up. John's a little more modest than he needs to be. This Midwestern Historian Working Group and the various panels that have been established at conferences around the Midwest in the last year or two are entirely his doing. He's the spear carrier on this thing. And while we are featured here together, and our books are also going to be featured at the Dakota Conference at Augustana College in late April, where we're bringing in some outside critics and commentators, these books were written entirely separately. I knew that John was working on some articles and things, but I really had no idea that he was working on the kind of argument book that he is. So, but our minds are working on parallel paths, and I have to be honest, I'm coming to you from a somewhat different perspective. The focus of my book entirely, and I've been thinking about it for over 20 years, is on small towns, and that small towns have been neglected by historians. And since I'm a Midwesterner myself, and I knew I had to focus my attention somewhat and couldn't spread myself all over the country from coast to coast, I chose to focus on the Midwest, knowing also, as John has said so well, that Midwestern history has been neglected. So While we both are on the same page, we're coming at this whole thing from slightly different angles.
Now,
I think, Carl...
Yeah, go ahead, John. John Locke.
Well, I was just going to say, one of the unifying qualities of these two books is, as John has so eloquently said many times, is that place matters. It matters where you grow up. And in his book on small town boys, he talks about the experiences of these men who went on to have great careers in various fields. And he talks about what it meant that they grew up in the Midwest as opposed to growing up in Mississippi or California or some other place. And I think we need to focus on place and region and roots a little bit more, and that will help us to think about what the Midwest is and what it's meant to our country. But we just haven't been very good at focusing on this place as a region in the last 30 or 40 years, and hopefully we can turn that around.
And this has broader significance, too, because while we're both historians and coming at it from that disciplinary perspective, it reaches across all the social sciences and the humanities, but especially the social sciences, which get into theory, social theory, and behavioral models, and quantitative analysis, you tend to write about what you can measure. And people can measure people's wealth, income. They can tell if they're a man or a woman. You've got gender, race, class, occupation, religion, ethnicity. And these kinds of things get characterized as motivating factors in people's behavior. But how do you measure place? You know, you can't just put a single number on it. You can't quantify this as well. And in the process, I think, without even thinking about it very much, social scientists, historians, humanities scholars, and so forth have tended to focus on other things that matter, but to leave out place, which, as John and I both say, matters just as much and sometimes more than everything else.
Well, John Miller, there are 22 people in your book that you write about.
Right.
They're economists, historians, entertainers, athletes. Henry Ford, Ronald Reagan included in that book from a variety of places in small town Midwest. In looking at them, are there certain things from that small town experience that they have common that helped them develop into the people that they became?
Well, you know, there's one single criteria that stands out above all the rest, and I'm never going to argue that everybody from a small town or everybody from the Midwest or everybody from a Midwestern small town behaves this way or that way. We've got William Jennings Bryan, the populist Democrat, and Ronald Reagan, the conservative Republican, and everybody in between economically and sociologically and so forth. But as we've been saying, the thing that matters is they come from a particular place. The best way to explain this is to give examples, and the one that I tend to go to first because it's just so obvious is Meredith Wilson, who came from Mason City, Iowa. He was the director of a variety of different NBC radio shows in the 1940s and 1950s and was always talking in those shows and off the show about his small town of Mason City and what a wonderful place it was. And finally, Frank Lesser, who wrote Guys and Dolls and other major musical pieces, said, "Meredith, you talk about that hometown of yours so much, you ought to write a musical play about it." And so Meredith did, and that became The Music Man. And in similar fashion, one can point to many of these other men and how their particular experiences in their hometowns affected their later behavior, thoughts, and just their lives.
Well, John Miller, talking about the Music Man, it's still a popular musical to this day. I'm wondering what the response to that musical, what that means for the understanding of the Midwest. Is it seen as sort of a nostalgic place in the past? I mean, the Music Man was set, in the early part of the 1900s?
Right, 1912 to be specific,
okay.
And he has a specific number of people who lived in that town, I forget exactly, 2,112 or something. In fact, there was an article in Commentary Magazine within the last 6 or 8 months by a famous theater critic and social commentator who I highly respect, but he went back and revisited The Music Man and saw it as a wonderful evocation of what it was like to grow up in a small town in the Midwest. And I wrote a letter, which they published in Commentary, which pointed out, as I do in several pages at the end of my chapter, that the Mason City, which became that the River City, as it's portrayed in the musical, is nothing at all like the Mason City that Meredith Wilson was a 10-year-old in 1912, because they not only were manufacturing automobiles, they were the largest producer of clay tiles in the world. They had 7-story buildings downtown, and it was nothing, you know. You use the word nostalgia, and as I say in the introduction to my book, we have to be very aware of not getting caught in the nostalgia trap, which is that small towns were these wonderful, you know, places where everybody was friendly and happy and helped out their neighbors, because while that was part of the story, it was only a part, and there were very mixed behaviors in small towns, just as there are and always have been in big cities.
And John Locke, in trying to kind of get more people interested in Midwestern history and writing about Midwestern history, getting more historians to explore this part of our country's history, how do you stay away from that nostalgic aspect or creating this idyllic world that never quite existed?
Well, I think there's another school of thought out there that we also have to consider, and that is the school of thought that's very negative about the Midwestern small town. It's sometimes described as the revolt from the village school of thought. You know, Sinclair Lewis and Sherwin Anderson and people like that who under the traditional interpretation of their works, were very critical of small towns. So I'm not too worried about nostalgia taking over our thinking about the Midwest, because there's plenty of mixed messages out there. I would say, though, just on this revolt from the village point, that a number of these people who are interpreted as attacking small towns in the Midwest, when you go back and read their writings, they are quite positive about their where they grew up and what their experiences were and how much better life was back there, even though they went out into the world to make their living in New York or Hollywood or whatever. And so I would say that this must mean something. It must have had some major influence on them. Meredith Willson wrote this play because of his experience in Iowa. So this history, this experience they went through, was something that was shared by other people. That's why the play caught on. That's why lots of people went to it. That's why people listen to Garrison Keillor today, because it triggers something in their mind. It triggers memories. It makes them think, yes, this is kind of how it was. Now, I don't think even Garrison Keillor and people like that, they're not overly utopian. They certainly recognize that these places aren't perfect. So I've never been that concerned about people being too nostalgic about the Midwest, because there's plenty of countercurrents out there.
You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting, and we're talking with historians John Miller and John Locke, and they've both written books exploring the often neglected role of the Midwest on American history. And can you stay on the line? We'll take a short break, and we'll continue our discussion.
Great.
Welcome back to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. My guests are historians John Miller and John Locke. They've both written books exploring the often-neglected role of the Midwest on American history and small-town dreams, stories of Midwestern boys who shaped America. Historian John Miller tells the stories of Henry Ford, Ronald Reagan, Walt Disney, other Midwesterners who transformed the nation and the world. His book comes out in a few weeks. And in John Locke's book, The Lost Region, Toward a Revival of Midwestern History, he outlines how the Midwest shaped American institutions and attitudes. And John Locke gives a book talk and signing this evening that begins at 6 at Zanborough's Variety in Sioux Falls. John Miller, I'm interested in how you came up with the idea of writing about small town boys and how you chose the 22 small town boys that you did.
Well, I'm a small town boy from the Midwest myself, mostly Missouri. I started out as a political historian writing my dissertation and then my first book about Governor Phil Follett of Wisconsin. And at that point, I was looking for a direction to go. I had two different things that were on the table that I seriously considered, and I decided to go with the small town angle and wrote this book about looking for history on Highway 14, which got me going into one of the small town girls along that route, Laura Ingalls Wilder, and my career was rapidly going down the track. I was halfway through it by the time I ever seriously got thinking about this book about small town boys from the Midwest, which has been on my mind for at least 20 or 25 years. Just took me a while to get to it while I was working on Laura Ingalls Wilder. And I had a list at one time of 35 guys. That proved to be far too many. Some people would say with 22 and a book, it's 440 pages of text, that it's too long right now. But I just picked people that obviously were affected by the place in which they grew up and had interesting stories to tell, and that was my main goal in writing this, to emphasize, as John says, the importance of place in people's lives.
I
would add,
yeah,
Carl,
go ahead, John.
I was just going to say one of John Miller's small town boys is Frederick Jackson Turner from Portage, Wisconsin, who grew up in a part of Wisconsin that was something of the frontier at the time. And he went to graduate school in history to earn his PhD, just like John and I did. And one of the first things that Frederick Jackson Turner noticed when he got to graduate school in the East was that all anybody ever talked about was Europe and New England. And he said, look, there's a whole big chunk of country out there to the west, and we should be writing about that too. So he went and settled down at University of Wisconsin and began to write articles and a few books about his region. And that's how the first school of Midwestern history took off in the early 20th century. And it made it until about World War II, until it began to fizzle out. And after that, there was no organized study of the region. But I think that's a great example of where John Miller's book and my book sort of overlap, because we're focusing on the identity of people like Frederick Jackson Turner and what it meant to their lives and what it meant to the history of the Midwest.
Yeah, you know, our books are wonderfully complementary, despite the fact we are working on them totally independently. And while we know a little bit about what each other was doing, we didn't really know specifically what was going on. I can only hope that somebody out there in radio land, maybe somebody in Philadelphia or California, will hear this and write a dual review of our book for the New York Review of Books or something. We're really going to get something going, because it is a mystery how the Midwest cannot have a major historical journal devoted to Midwestern history, how we don't teach our state history. I mean, we do teach South Dakota history, but in a lot of the states in the Midwest, they don't teach state history. And John says it so well in his book. New England, the Northeast, have their historical organizations. The South has its historical organizations and journals and courses. The West does, and the Midwest is a big, gaping black hole in this. It's a mystery that we just find unfathomable, to tell you the truth.
Well, in talking about...
Let me give you a
John Locke.
Well, let me give you a statistic to sort of make the point that John Miller just made. If you go on Google and Google the history of the American South, you will get 400 times as much material as you get if you Google the history of the American Midwest. Well, that just shouldn't be, and because they're both vital and important regions. But for whatever reason, and there probably are many reasons, we have sort of dropped the ball in our part of the country in terms of studying our own identity and publishing books about ourselves. Now, again, there are exceptions to this, and there are very important books that come out that I think deserve a lot of praise. And South Dakota State Historical Society Press, for example, brings out important books about South Dakota. But in terms of books that focus on the region as a whole and what it means to American history more generally, there's virtually nothing like that. And I hope these books that John Miller and I have done will begin to change things in that regard.
Is part of the reason for that the big media centers are located in Los Angeles and in New York City?
Exactly.
That's a major explanation for it.
I pitched this book as long ago as 2001 at the St. Louis meeting of the Organization of American Historians to several big New York publishing houses. I had put together a chapter, a little package, an outline, and a list of chapters. And, you know, some of these guys took this home. I came back the next day, and they had two questions. Why aren't there any women in the book, which I think I had a good answer to, but the one which, you know, kind of took me off guard was, why the Midwest? And, you know, that's the question that a New York book representative would ask. Why would anybody want to study the Midwest? And I thought, well, if you don't get it, I guess maybe I better think of trying to find someplace else, because you will publish stuff on New England and Massachusetts and on the South and on the West, everything else, and why the Midwest is a question that is the problem that both John and I are trying to address here.
So what is the answer to that? Why the Midwest?
Well, because it's one of the four or five major regions in the United States, and it deserves and it deserves to be covered. But I believe all you need to do is read my book and look at the people who made, as I said, shaped not only the Midwest but the nation, from Sam Walton, who revolutionized retail selling in America, to Ronald Reagan, who reshaped politics, to Henry Ford, who reshaped the whole way we live our lives and the geography of the nation, and on down the line to Johnny Carson, and if you want to say Lawrence Welk, to Johnny Wooden, the greatest coach in the history of college sports, and on down the line. You know, it's a no-brainer. I'm not saying that the Midwest had more influence than the West, the South, or New England, but that it had at least as much influence on the historical development of this country.
Well, dealing with the whole small town nature of what you're writing about, John Miller, is part of the problem that so many of us are more and more removed from that small town background, that it's not as common an experience, particularly back during the days of the people that you're writing about.
Exactly. You know, the people who were the historians, the people that John talks about in his book, the Midwestern historians, were almost entirely small town. Yeah, they had grown up in small towns in the Midwest. And now, just demographically speaking, it's obvious that most people do live in metropolitan areas. Very few people come from small towns anymore. It's just the nature of statistics. And so they don't understand either what small town life is. They don't understand as much, and they just think they're of declining importance, and therefore the focus gets, another thing besides the lack of interest in the Midwest is that urban history largely focuses on large cities, on suburbs, on urban sprawl, on these kinds of things, and the small town, while it gets some attention, gets much less attention than it deserves, at least historically.
John Locke, I'm wondering, as you look at the nation as a whole, beyond just the Midwest, is there much of a regional distinctiveness anymore? As American culture is so much more homogenized, and we're all wired and connected to every place and everyone.
Well, it's certainly declined. Regional distinctions used to be much sharper and stronger. Prior to, say, 1950, there's been a lot of damage done to regional traditions by mass culture, mass media, mass-produced movies and television programs, which sort of eliminate regional distinctions to a certain extent. But they still exist. I mean, it's very clear to me that there's a major difference between Sioux City and Miami. You just walk around and look at the sights and sounds, and you have a sense of how distinctive places can be. But I don't think we've kind of lost our ability to see some of these things to a certain extent. But I do think it's important. I think it's important for us to know where we're from, what our roots are, what our identity is. There was a study done recently that the New York Times did a story about, that one of the most important things you can do for your children is to teach them where they're from and where their parents grew up and what struggles they went through, to give them a sense of rootedness and identity, so that they don't just feel like they're free-floating atoms out there in the atmosphere, disconnected from everything, and all they have to do is look at their iPhone for answers. It's important for people to have a sense of place and where they're from. And all these studies that the New York Times collected and analyzed made the point that it makes us stronger and more healthy psychologically if we have a sense of who we are. So I think if we can tap into that instinct that people have to learn about themselves and their roots, I think that will be a good thing. Unfortunately, I just don't think a lot of Midwesterners know how much great history is here all around them, because they've been deprogrammed, or it's never been brought up to them. It's never been emphasized to them. But if they have a short introduction to some of these biographies of Midwesterners, or a short introduction to some of this history of the Midwest, they may take a second look and begin to think about this, and it will help them to strengthen their sense of identity and their sense of place, and I think that's good for all of us.
Well, we're just about out of time here. I want to thank both of you for taking the time to join us on Dakota Midday. And John Miller, your book is Small Town Dream: Stories of Midwestern Boys Who Shaped America. That's published by the University Press of Kansas. And that comes out in March?
Well, they say March in the catalog. Last time I looked at Amazon, it said February 21st. So sometime in the next month or so, hopefully, we may have it in our hands.
All right. And John Locke, your book, The Lost Region, Toward a Revival of Midwestern History, that's been out for a couple of months now, and you have a book talk and signing this evening?
Yes, tonight at 6 o'clock in downtown Sioux Falls on Phillips Avenue at Zambro's Variety Store. We're going to have a book talk, and there's going to be some other people there from the literary community in Sioux Falls, and we're going to have a reception afterwards at Crawford. So I hope everybody can stop down and join in the fun.
All right, John Locke and John Miller, again, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with us on Dakota Midday.
Thanks for the opportunity.